What's going on, swingers? This is Ross Stripling, and welcome to the Saturday Rewind, where every other Saturday we play a throwback interview of some of our favorite big swing guests. This week, we have Sacramento Kings forward Harrison Barnes on the pod. In this interview, Harrison gives us a little insight on what it's like to be the number one ranked player coming out of high school, as well as his time playing for the North Carolina Tar Heels. This was back in quarantine when neither Harrison or I knew when our sport was coming back. It's also a lot of fun to cross professional sports, talk a little basketball on the podcast. So with that being said, here's this week's Saturday Rewind with Harrison Barnes.
We're lucky to be joined by NBA champion and Olympic gold medalist, current forward for the Sacramento Kings, Harrison Barnes. What's going on, Harrison?
Not a whole lot. How you guys doing?
Good, good, man. Thanks for joining us. I wanted to kind of go back towards the beginning, Harrison. I've always found your career pretty interesting. I follow a lot of high school basketball, a lot of recruiting. So when you were kind of coming up, you were a consensus number one overall player coming out of high school. And I imagine for a guy like you in that position, like the recruitment process has just got to be crazy. Like what was all that like, all the attention so early, and at age of 17, you're like crowned as like the next guy.
Yeah, it was definitely crazy. You know, I grew up in Iowa, so, you know, to have all these, you know, big time college coaches, you know, coming to our little gym and seeing our little pickup runs, you know, it was just crazy because it was something that, you know, when I was younger in middle school and even my first couple of years in high school, you know, you'd read about all these big colleges, all these, you know, big time players. And then I was fortunate enough to catch a break and be able to go to one of those camps and compete against some of those guys and then get to experience what that was like. So it was definitely a whirlwind to just be able to, you know, be recruited and go on all these visits and experience that in high school.
How integrated is Michael Jordan into the North Carolina recruiting process? Is he like there to shake your hand when big, you know, potential recruits are there? Is he, you know, just posted all over the stadium arena, or is it just like known he went to North Carolina and it is what it is?
No, so it's funny. I actually, on my visit, he was there because they had like a huge anniversary reunion for all the alumni. So my view of that is a little jaded. I mean, I walk in and, you know, MJ sitting there, Dean Smith was there. So, you know, it was an unbelievable experience for just, you know, a fan like myself of just Carolina basketball. But MJ is a huge part of Carolina basketball. But once you go there, you see all the other great players, you know, that went there before MJ, with him, and after him.
That's so funny, man, because I remember like during your recruitment process, like wondering where you were going to go. And when you took that visit, and it like came out that MJ was there, I just remember everyone be like, oh, well, he's clearly going to UNC. MJ like flew in for him and all that. So it's funny to hear that like it was potentially like an alumni event as well.
No, it was, you know, everybody came back from that. And it was crazy because it just so happened that my visit was on that weekend. So I was able to see, like when they talk about the Carolina family, I was able to literally see, you know, everybody. I was a huge Vince Carter fan, you know what I'm saying? So to like see him for the first time, see all the NBA guys that they play, had a pickup game, you know, meet James Worthy, all that type of stuff was incredible.
That's very convenient scheduling from Roy Williams there.
He's a master recruiter, that's for sure.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing there.
Absolutely. So you played a year at North Carolina and you decided to go back for your sophomore year. You know, that's not really something that happens in college baseball. It's either you get signed out of high school or you got to go play 3 years of college baseball. You know, so not really something that really anybody in college baseball has to make a major decision like that. How tough was it to make that decision to go back for your sophomore year, or is it kind of a no-brainer for you?
No, it was a tough decision. You know, we just lost in the Elite Eight. Coach Williams was saying that, you know, I would have been a lottery pick, and the lockout was actually coming up that year. So I kind of had to decide whether or not I was going to, you know, bet on myself, go get drafted and just kind of wait, or come back and have most of the team come back and try to win a national championship. And, you know, when I weighed the options, I definitely wanted to go pro, but I loved college. I loved UNC. I loved competing with my team that I had there. So I decided to come back another year.
And like, what a great decision it ended up being, obviously, you know, staying, and you probably improved your draft stock maybe a little bit, but obviously you got drafted to the Warriors and you were able to go through that crazy run. So like, I bet looking back, you got to be happy at the decision.
man, you know, it was crazy. You know, coming back, you know, my second year, some people thought I was crazy. Then in the draft, I thought I was going to go forward at Cleveland, and I didn't. And then I actually worked out for Golden State, like, I want to say the day before the draft or 2 days before the draft. And they had a player that they were going to draft. They said, oh, we know you probably won't be here, so we're going to take this guy. But if you happen to be around and we may draft you. I was like, okay, cool. You know, that's great. And it just so happened that it worked out that way. And, you know, it was an unbelievable 4 years there.
And what a run by that front office. Like, obviously drafting Steph a few years later, Clay the year before you, and then Draymond the second round. Like, to draft that core in just a 4 or 5 year stretch is just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy what, you know, how life works and decisions. And you know, that front office, they did an unbelievable job of just scouting talent and, you know, taking chances on guys. And, you know, a dynasty was made.
So one thing is, I've only ever played for one manager. They're not really called coaches, head coaches in baseball. They're called managers. So I only know one guy. You know, you had Mark Jackson, and then he gets fired and Steve Kerr becomes the coach. You know, what was kind of different? I obviously don't want you to talk smack about Mark Jackson by any means, but what was different about Kerr that kind of helped you guys take it to the next level once he stepped in?
Yeah, I mean, I think both coaches were really good at instilling confidence. You know, Coach Jackson was, you know, big in terms of giving guys freedom, allowing them to play with confidence and grow in that way. And, you know, Coach Kerr was, you know, very cerebral coach. You know, he knows how to talk to each player individually, you know, and he doesn't talk to everyone the same way. And I think a lot of that is his time that he was around Phil Jackson, that he was around Greg Popovich. And he kind of took, you know, some of the best of both worlds and a lot of championship experience and was able to kind of, you know, give that to our team.
And I think too, like what Kerr was able to do was unleash you and Draymond in those smaller lineups, which ended up being huge for y'all.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the things that makes Draymond the great player that he is, you know, his ability to, you know, control the game defensively. And I think that's what really allowed us, you know, when you have guys like him, Andrew Bogut, Andre Iguodala, guys who are just defensive juggernauts that allow, you know, our defense to move the way it does, switching, getting out of running, you know, making all the highlight plays, things like that. You know, it starts on the defensive end and it starts with, you know, those guys.
So Cooper told me, Harrison, that you didn't have a sip of alcohol until you guys won the championship in 2015. Is that true?
That is true. That is true.
I did my research, Harrison.
I like that.
Man, you know, props to you for sure. So two questions, I guess, like, did you go out in college and not drink, or did you kind of just lay low in college? And then two, I mean, you must have gotten pretty blitzed that night, I would imagine, if your first time drinking is a championship celebration.
Yeah, no, it was funny when I was, you know, growing up, you know, I always had friends that would ask, you know, if I would drink, and I was like, nah, I'm not going to drink. It had to be for something special. They're like, okay, like, what would that be? I was like, you know, if I won an NBA championship someday. Right. You kind of think of like the craziest thing possible. I'm like, okay, if that happened, then I would drink. So Coach Kerr knew that, and we win, we're celebrating. And he's like, yo, it's time for you to have that first drink. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, yo, you got to have your first drink. I was like, all right, cool. So he brings me over a shot of Don Julio. And I was like,
that's a good place to start.
Yeah, no, for sure. 1942. That's a nice entry point. And I was like, yo, I've seen a lot of shots, man. That looks like a double. And he's like, no, no, you're good. You're good. You got it. And I was like, all right, let's try this thing out. And it was an unbelievable way to cap off a great night.
I'm sure. I always think about those championship runs, and I think of one guy in particular, but I'm curious to hear who you say, like, who would you say was just like the J.R. Smith of that group, like the drunkest guy with their shirt off, partying till like wee hours of the morning?
Who was that guy? It might have been Mo Spates.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
He definitely enjoyed himself.
I think about the Draymond too, like the Steph, yep. Clay, yep. Splash Brothers, yep.
Oh yeah, E-40.
Kind of fascinated with talking to guys in other sports, football, basketball, whatever it may be, and just to like to pick their brains about like their schedule versus ours, you know. So we play 162 games in 6 months. You guys play 82 games in 6 months. When you guys travel, it's usually just always right for one game and then back, or maybe to another city. We're usually going for 3 or 4 games. You know, do you think that y'all's schedule is tougher than our schedule, or if it, you know, is, in what way? I just, the amount of travel you guys do always blows my mind, because I feel like we couldn't possibly travel anymore and you guys do it twice as much as we do.
No, I mean, your guys' preparation is much, much more difficult, just because I don't think a lot of people on the outside of the sports world realize how much it takes to get up for every game, how much preparation time, how early you have to show up to the ballpark before you play. And you're doing that how many nights in a row? You're doing that literally twice as much as we do. So, you know, some people might say, oh, well, you know, basketball this, or, you know, football, like the amount of games that you guys have, the amount of time you guys have to train, be at the arena, be at the ballpark, travel, do all that type of stuff is significantly more.
Yeah. I think about when, like, as a starter, Harrison, like, you know, you've started most of your career, and that's just got to be insane. I can't even imagine. I go outside and play golf, or I play one pickup basketball game and I'm sore for 3 weeks. Of course, I'm not a professional basketball player like you are, but I can't imagine the hours that are spent before and after games just taking care of your body.
I mean, the biggest preparation for us, you know, is in the off season. I mean, there's only so much you can gain. You're mostly trying to maintain throughout the season, but in terms of getting your cardio base right, getting your body, you know, ready to, you know, absorb the contact, absorb, you know, the heavy minutes, the back-to-backs, the 3 and 4, all those types of things, you know, you have to definitely put in the time to make sure your body can handle that.
Because y'all don't practice, do you? Like, and during the season, really?
Only vet teams that win a lot of games don't practice. the rest of us in the league, we practice.
So you brought up preparation. You know, watching video is just a massively integral part of baseball. I mean, you're watching the other pitcher, you're watching the hitters, you're putting scouting reports together. There's a lot of video scouting, all that kind of stuff that goes into getting ready for a baseball game. How much in basketball do you guys actually scout opposing teams? I know CJ McCollum touched on a little bit. He'll kind of like scout the guy he's guarding, what his moves are, and try and get an edge that way. But how much video and scouting is there really done in the NBA?
Oh, there's a ton. I mean, from just the player side, you know, you watch film, you know, every day, whether it's offense, defense of the game you just played, maybe it's the offense, defense of the team that you're going to play, or maybe the last time you played, or whatever it may be. And then you kind of go into individual things, you know, with a specific coach, and, you know, they talk about, you know, what you were doing defensively on this play, or what, you know, what you need to improve on offensively. So, you know, film for us is huge. And I think that there's so much you can learn from the old eye in the sky, because it never lies.
Yeah, I imagine in those playoff series too, like you've been in, just the scouting just gets ramps up to a whole different level. And like by those late game series, you just know everyone like the back of the hand. I remember, like Ross said, we had CJ on our podcast, and he was talking about kind of plane rides and him and Dame just sit and watch film on guys. And by the end of those series, it's like they're your own teammates.
No question. I mean, in the playoffs, and that's why it's such a great time of year. But I mean, you just know the other team, like the back of your hand. I mean, you know, all their plays, you know, every single player to the, you know, all the coaches, to the people in the back row, you know, everything about, you know, everything that they do. And when you have all the information, it's just a battle of wills, like whose will is going to triumph over the other, because all of the X's and O's, both sides know that.
I like that. I'm pumped now.
Another thing that definitely really interests me, Harrison, is in baseball and players in our league are trying desperately to get better at this is players in the NFL and the NBA build their brands way better than baseball players. I mean, it just seems like every NBA player has a million followers or more when we only might have two or three baseball players with a million followers on Instagram. What is it, or what do you guys do, or what is, I don't know, maybe taught to y'all when you're young in the league or whatever that allows y'all to build such amazing brands as basketball players?
Honestly, you know, I think it's the popularity of the game, you know, for us. You know, I don't think it's anything that, you know, we ourselves are doing. You know, when you look at The Last Dance, I don't know if you guys have been watching that, you know, on
Sunday. Yes.
You know, that's kind of where you see, that's where like the NBA took off. You know what I'm saying? Not saying that it wasn't where it was today back then, but like, you know, those Bulls teams, you know, those rivalries, you know, kind of the on, off the court, everything that was going on, that built that following. And then I think players now today are continuing to carry that torch, whether it's off court fashion, whether it's music, whether it's whatever it is, you know, basketball players, I think, do a great job of, you know, showing our culture, you know, within the culture.
Yeah, like I love that episode. I think it was episode 5 of Last Dance where they talked about Jordan's shoe deal and stuff like that. I just found it incredible. They said the best players in the league were getting like $100,000 on their shoe deal. And you think about guys like Steph and Harden and KD and LeBron and all those guys. I mean, the numbers are insane what you're getting. And it's a great point. Like, I think basketball has ingrained itself as a culture now. And I know for me, as a guy that just loves the sport, you know, it is a part of what I talk about. It's part of what I wear. The shoes are not even, I don't even play basketball in the basketball shoes I own. So I think basketball has a unique ability to ingrain itself in culture, like you said.
Harrison, are you one of the 8 million people watching The Last Dance?
I am. You know, I'm a huge, just fan of the game of basketball. So, you know, every Sunday that comes on, man, you know, those episodes go too quick. I wish it was longer than 10.
Go ahead, Cooper.
I was going to say, it almost makes me wish that like I didn't watch them as they came out and just binged them. And so I could have just spent like an entire weekend just watching only The Last Dance.
I know. But then it's like there's so many clips of the episodes like the next day, or like you read about them. So it's like I'd rather not have it spoiled for me. I'd rather kind of watch it in.
It's nice to feel old school again, where you have to like watch something and wait a week for it to come back.
It is nice, especially it helps pass the time when, you know, you're confined to the house.
Yeah, for sure. So what, when you watch that, what is like the biggest difference that sticks out to you as far as, you know, mid 90s basketball to now 2020 basketball?
Those rivalries of the teams. And, you know, when they talked about like, you know, Chicago and Detroit, if you had family in Detroit, like when the Bulls were playing the Pistons, like, you know, you guys didn't speak. Like there was that divide. It was that deep, you know what I'm saying, of competition. And I feel like back then too, a lot of those teams stayed together longer. So it was kind of like people identified more like with that team. This is my team. I love these guys. And in today's league, with so many changing of teams and players and how the business goes, I don't think that's necessarily the case anymore, because the historic rivalries are still there, but that generation built those rivalries.
Well, like, how about the idea that Jordan basically would rather quit than play for another organization? Like, that would just be crazy in today's NBA if LeBron, after he left Cleveland, just didn't sign with Miami. Like, today, MJ would be like, all right, screw it. I don't like management. I don't like the coaches. This isn't a good situation. I'm going to sign with the Clippers. You know, it's crazy how much that's changed.
Yeah, that loyalty back then definitely ran deep. And I think that, you know, part of them establishing the popularity of the league is that now there's so much shifting because there's so many more dollars involved with the league as a whole.
And it was like some of that loyalty was misguided in a way, because that led to someone like Scottie Pippen getting a 6-year, $17 million deal. Like, I think that you guys have finally understood your value and are starting to exploit that in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy that, you know, he was on that deal.
It's incredible.
But at the same time, too, you know, it's like, you know, if he wasn't on that deal, would they still have had that team that was able to, you know, win those championships?
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, I mean, you were kind of in a great situation in your career because you came into a situation that was building, so you got to play through that and then obviously win a championship and then kind of explore your own career more. So, like, that was just kind of a lucky way or fortunate way for you to kind of come out of it.
Yeah, it was crazy. My rookie year, you know, Steph was up for an extension and, you know, he signed that based off, you know, his injury history. And, you know, had he been signed to a major deal financially, I don't know if that team would have been able to, you know, stay together for 4 years.
Yeah. Or
acquisitions that happened. So, you know, it's crazy to think about, you know, things like that. And, you know, it's been, you know, great stops in Dallas and now Sacramento for me. And I just, you know, look forward to, you know, hopefully getting Sacramento back to the playoffs and, you know, experiencing, you know, another run.
Pretty crazy to think, man, that you're 27 years old, right? And you're in your, I'm looking at Basketball Reference right now, like your ninth season. Is that possible? Am I counting this correct?
Eighth season,
27 years old. That's awesome, man. So what, you know, what do you look back on those eight seasons and think of as maybe your favorite moment of your career so far? I guess maybe take a championship away. How about like a personal moment?
Yeah, I think for me, just playing against some of the greats, you know, rest in peace, you know, to Kobe Bryant and, you know, Tim Duncan, playing alongside Dirk Nowitzki, you know, just being able to see these guys who, you know, I grew up watching, I grew up idolizing. You know, I remember my first preseason game, you know, was against the Lakers. You know, back when Steve Nash was with them, Dwight Howard was with them, at a World Peace, Powell. I look at these guys like, dude, 3 years ago, man, I was rooting for you guys in the final. 2 years ago, 4 years ago, I was rooting for you guys in the finals. And like now I'm like on the court with you. So, you know, I think that's been one of the biggest things that I've enjoyed about being in the league is, you know, you're able to literally play against people that, you know, you grew up watching.
Yeah, I know that feeling well, right? Where you're kind of in awe of the person, but then also you kind of want to, you know, for me, it's like really want to get them out. Like the first time I faced David Ortiz or Mike Trout, you know, like, you know, I'm pitching along. I'm a teammate of Clayton Kershaw. Like, you know, those guys that you're just in awe of, but at the same time, you want to beat them. You know, it's kind of actually a really strange feeling and kind of something that we're really lucky to get to do because it is really cool, man. Like you got to play with Kobe Bryant. That's pretty dang awesome.
And I think it's just, you know, being a part of the fraternity, you know, you kind of, you know, you see it and you watch it. And as a kid, you want to work really hard to hopefully try and make it to that level. And then once you're there, it's like, you know, it's like, welcome. Like you're one of us, you're able to, you know, play in this league and, you know, cherishing those moments. Now, when you realize how short life is, it definitely makes you appreciate every time you step on the floor, you know, the guys that you're going against.
And the NBA is like that more than anything. You think about so many of y'all are coming out at 18 years old and here soon it's going to be even younger. And you may be playing against like a 38-year-old hopped up Kevin Garnett. And it's just like, it's such a weird concept to think that there's could be a 15, 20-year gap. And you may have grown up not even watching some of these guys. So it is pretty unprecedented. It's like no other feeling, I imagine, in any other walk of life because you just can't really replicate that at all.
I mean, to go from, you know, I had Vince Carter's, you know, Toronto jersey to, you know, seeing him at Carolina to now 8 years in to the league still playing against, you know what I'm saying? Like you never think, man, that's a long time I'm going to be seeing this guy and then playing against this guy.
Yeah, I was like tearing my ankle in those Vince Carter Nike Shocks in middle school and he's still playing.
Yeah.
Remember how bad those were, but they look so cool.
Oh, they were dope. They were dope.
Yeah.
So before we get into the speed round, Harrison, I want to ask you one last thing. I grew up about 10 minutes from American Airlines in Dallas. I grew up in a city called South Lake. And, you know, so I'm a Mavericks fan for sure. And obviously we've seen Luka come onto the scene and be one of the best players in basketball right now. What was it like? You know, I guess you really got to see him kind of come over and get his career going, man. What was he, you know, did you know he was going to be this good, or is it kind of taking you by surprise, or what were like the early thoughts around Luka as you watched him get going in the NBA?
So I think the thing, you know, with guys coming from overseas is that they start professionally, you know, very young. And, you know, for him to get, you know, MVP of EuroLeague, you know, was huge. And it just showed when he came over to the NBA, the confidence that he had in himself, in his game, in what he was able to do. And I think that, you know, he's in a great situation now where he's able to flourish and, you know, be the best version of himself and elevated that team to, you know, playoff contention.
Yeah, it is pretty special to watch, man. I'll be kind of how Cooper talked about it, like, what, he's 20 years old. I mean, you know, he could play another 20 years in the NBA. It's just wild to think about. I'm hoping to play like another four.
Well, swingers, we hope you enjoyed this week's Saturday Rewind. Be sure to tune in next Saturday to hear what interview we replay next. Do you want to hear Strip and I answer your question on the show? Then send us a video of your question by clicking the link in the show description and see if we pick yours. Don't forget to catch Strip and I every Wednesday for a brand new episode and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Our handle is @BigSwingPodcast. We'll see you later, swingers.